The Dot Connectors, brought to you by Omnia Global. Welcome back, everybody, for another episode with yet another fascinating individual. This week is with Nicholas Adler, who Google describes as both a scientist and entrepreneur, which is quite an unusual mix. And we talk about his latest venture, Swedish Green Tech, which is focused on all things green energy, but not the solutions side where obviously a lot of the world is focused, but instead the infrastructure side. And we talk about what he describes as the emerging dysfunction in Sweden when it comes to green infrastructure, not just Sweden, in fact, actually all around the world. It's a really interesting take on where the problems sit and ultimately what he believes is the solution. So sit back and enjoy, and then we'll catch you next time. So today I am joined by not just one guest, which is my old acquaintance on these podcasts, Daniel Hansen. How are you, Daniel? You well today?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm very well, as always, but I'm also joined by a second guest, and that is Nicholas Adler, who Google describes as a Swedish entrepreneur and scientist. Nicholas, how are you today with such a title? Busy, I guess.
Yes, thanks. Thanks, Lauren, for asking. No, it's a great title. I like it, actually, to be honest. So I'm fine. Sweden is getting cold, but otherwise good.
I was going to say, I mean, we can all talk about the cold, can't we? But -1, -2, yeah, I'm not envious of you at the moment. And this is a podcast where, as our listeners, we've been away a little while, but you'll remember that we, obviously, given I'm British, we always comment on the weather. So apologies if anyone thinking, oh God, is this woman again talking about the weather? It's a British thing. Apologies. Anywho, with such a title to your name, Nicholas, I'm genuinely excited to ask you this first question. And of course, there's always a bit of flattery on these podcast episodes, but you are an individual that when I ask you next about your background from a business standpoint, academic standpoint, it's extremely impressive. So I'd love to ask you, tell me more about you and where you've come from leading up to the present day.
Thanks, Lauren, for asking. I mean, I did start off as an academic. I was actually thinking, and I was, I think, fooled into thinking that in the academic environment, you were allowed to ask the complicated questions and spend time to solve difficult problems, change the world, and so on and so forth. I realized it was all politics, but I did spend some 10 good years in the academic setting. I was very lucky. I had the right supervisor. So I became a very young professor at the time and got the chance of raising a lot of funds to set up a research center in Sweden and France, actually. So we were collecting three universities, Chalmers University in Sweden, Stockholm School of Economics, and Ecole des Mines in Paris. So we created a center for, we brought in early perspectives on AI in the late 90s. So sorry to say that I'm an old guy. So this was the old 90s. So we had a chance of working with large companies in Sweden and France to see how digitalization and also AI would change their businesses and those industries that they were part of. So that was what I spent a lot of my last few years in the academic setting. And in that research center, which was we had three sites, one in Paris, one in Gothenburg, and one in Stockholm. We developed a lot of cool projects. And from that, I was following the projects out of the academic community, one could say. So since early 2000s, I've been an entrepreneur and also over time also investor, only investing so far in stuff I've been involved in myself. But that's what I do. So I am excited about new technologies that transforms important industries. And what I thought I could do as an academic, I realized I cannot. You are at best some sort of an entertainment for decision makers. I felt that as an entrepreneur, however, you can choose to actually influence, shape, I mean, change things that you think is important. So.
Fantastic. And it's sort of a nice segue then into sort of how, you know, today's episode, we're going to talk about, you know, green energy, green infrastructure. Sort of what's the segue, I guess, from those research centres into all things green energy I guess.
It was actually a little bit of a detour before that. So mostly it was AI and healthcare for quite a while for me. So I did a lot of trying to apply different ways of transforming the healthcare sector. The healthcare sector is one of the few sectors that actually hasn't been having any productivity gains the last 50 years. If you look across different sectors, it's amazing how ineffective the healthcare sector is. So I thought that with AI tools, you should be able to unlock that. So we did a couple of good projects, but never fully transformed the healthcare sector. As you know, I mean, we all know that the healthcare sector still have the same productivity issues. We did, however, certain segments, we actually showed that you could do tremendous things with computing power. So what brought me into energy was actually the vast energy needs for high performance computing. So to run complicated AI models or complicated language models, you need a lot of computing power. And at the time, this is 10 years back or so, it was nobody spoke about the inefficiency of using air-cooled computers and just, you could say, spending all that electricity running the computer, running fans to cool down the computer, which spent additional 30% of energy. And then all that heated air was lost, just thrown out in the surroundings without extracting the energy content. So that was something that fascinated me and brought me into the energy space. So it was the computers that brought me into the energy space and tried to find solutions how one could harvest and extract that energy content.
And there's a lot of, you know, talk in the green energy space about the immediate sort of solutions, you know, whether we wind generation, solar power and so forth. And there's something, I think, in this where you were looking at, you know, the energy usage on computers, you know, not just looking at how computers run, but actually the energy element of it and how it could be more efficient, that I can kind of then segue into your stance, actually, which I want to talk to you about in a moment, but looking at energy infrastructure, not necessarily the energy creation, which I think a lot of the world is focused on, and kind of go, well, actually, what's the bit behind the scenes, frankly? How can it be better? Is it possible? You know, have we got the right infrastructure, frankly? And we spoke, obviously, as we always do with guests, you know, about this sort of emerging dysfunction, frankly, that you've identified in Sweden and other countries as well, not just Sweden, when it comes to the infrastructure. So looking not just at solutions, you know, talk to me about what you have identified and how you've kind of landed in that space.
I mean, the most important thing that struck me was after identifying the energy inefficiency around computers, I started to put an interest in the larger energy systems. And one important observation and quite remarkable thing is that 70% of all energy being produced on the planet Earth is actually wasted, not used for anything meaningful. And that's quite amazing. And that's very much infrastructure dependent. So the most important part of it is the thermal heat that is generated by any type of energy production process. And that is things you can do, a lot about. So I was excited about that and was lucky enough to find a lot of brilliant people helping to give perspectives on that. And it's obvious that two concepts have surfaced over the last few years in my entrepreneurship when it comes to energy. And that brings us to the infrastructure question you raise. Mm. One is that the flexibility and synergies is obviously needed. Because in energy systems, we haven't in the past been, I think, driven to looking for those synergies, which is obvious. So by co-locating energy intensive operations that fit well together so that one of the neighbors can get use of the other neighbor's waste and hence getting a effectively sourcing situation at lower cost, and the other guys can get paid for their waste. that, of course, brings us into to a dynamic which is very interesting. And if you build those pieces of the puzzle in a smart way, you can actually grab a lot of that 70% waste just by clustering, I mean, energy activities. And that is, I would say, the basis for an effective energy infrastructure. Clusters which are distributed in a smart way across, I mean, geographies of where energy needs pop up. So if you would plan energy systems like that, instead of as they unfortunately have been planned today, and also challenged by recent, I would say, political ambitions to go green without really doing the engineering feasibility studies before. So as we have seen across Europe in particular, we love using tax money to incentivize solar panels and wind parks. The bigger, the better, and then thinking that they can be contributions to the grid. And they were all in the past, I mean, 100 years back, developed for off-the-grid applications. I think some great green politicians somewhere 30 years ago, so probably fueled by some great entrepreneurs seeing an opportunity, thought that this could be solution to the greenification of energy. And that was probably one of the most expensive decisions made in modern time. So today, I mean, our growing dependency on these type of sources for energy, which of course has some sort of, let's call it, green framing and potentially green contributions, but as it has been deployed, it doesn't. So at the moment, they necessitate a lot of, I mean, incentives to be built when they actually function well, when the sun is shining and the wind is blowing, then nobody wants to pay for the electricity.
Mm.
And thirdly, when they actually do produce as well, they produce at the wrong frequencies. So transmission grids are very sensitive entities, vehicles. So those vehicles needs a very exact frequency. In our case, 50 hertz. And if we don't give them that frequency, they stop functioning as they should, and they start destroying sensitive equipment, as for example computers or sensitive production facilities or hospital equipment or whatever. So the effects of dysfunctional grids is massive. So long answer to your question, but I do see that we have made so many politically wrong choices, which has created a lot of almost unsolvable challenges for our politicians of today when it comes to the energy infrastructure, which is, of course, a great opportunity for technology and entrepreneurs to come and provide those solutions and try to fix it step by step.
And indeed investors, which Daniel, looping you back in now, you know, obviously we've spoken at length before about, you know, the green energy sector, all things renewables. And, you know, I think, as I said earlier, people are very focused on those solutions, but, you know, they're very intricate. If the sun's not shining, the wind's not blowing, but ultimately, actually, there is that infrastructure piece. From an investor standpoint, you know, do you think that investors have been missing a trick, so to speak, by focusing on these outputs but not looking at the setup behind the scenes?
You know, unfortunately, you know, investors look for yields and. Mm. You know, the demands for provided in the yield provided in the market when it's subsidized by governments and politicians is very artificial. So you can run investors, you know, you can run off a cliff being happy with your yield because you're incentivized to run over that cliff. So there's been a tremendous amount of wind parks and solar parks and even Germany shutting down nuclear, which they were already green, and then now they're trying different green strategy. So because you are so heavily incentivized, subsidized and, you know, subsidies and whatever you can get your hands on, it's been an artificially high demand for specific types of renewables, which, you know, is a clear error. And you know, you might have pushed it, you know, fast in a direction that will become greener, But right now we're in a little bit of a stage where we all run around and calling it green, where it's actually not, right? It's, you know, like electric cars, much more polluting than a gasoline car, because we're not there yet.
Yeah.
You know, first we kind of get people accustomed to it. And then once you can have all these natural resources that it goes into the cars in a green way, then maybe, yeah, we get there. But then you'll have the next problem is if all the energy that is consumed in, you know, gasoline today is all of a sudden have to be delivered over the grid and produced somewhere, and someone needs to power charge his car anywhere in a country. It's a totally, you know, people just ignore how much it affects the grid and how you deliver this type of energy at scale anywhere, you know, overnight, because you're just remove all taxes on cars and say, just buy batteries, and then it'll be someone else's problem. How you actually charge it, right? So I think it's from an investor perspective, you know, there's been yields to be, you know, there's been profits to be made for a decade or two, but it's artificially created. Now we're going into a period where energy need from data centers and AI and cars and whatnot is going to explode the need in the market. And now the capital coming into the market now will be to fix an actual problem that we created ourselves over the last two decades, and to actually turn something green, and to change, you know, a growing, and to adapt to a growing need that, you know, AI's power consumption is massive. You know, it's I think it's incomprehensible how much energy it requires for a stupid question asked on ChatGPT, right? Where, you know, luckily Greta Thunberg hasn't seen that yet. Else we would have had, you know, protests, you know, up and down the streets, I guess. But so from an investor's perspective, there's going to be even more focus on it. But I think it's going to be for more actual reasons and problems going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, makes total sense. And Nicholas, obviously our listeners are probably thinking, what is this? What is this individual working on right now? Obviously, we've discussed and sort of set the scene here. Tell me a bit more about Swedish green tech and why it is one such solution to, you know, the green energy infrastructure. And also just to add in there, naturally you're Swedish, but, you know, a bit about the landscape in Sweden, because I think that's quite important as well. And why, obviously, we have Swedish green tech.
Yes, so Sweden is facing a couple of challenges at the moment, which I do think that more countries will also face soon. But we have been a little bit ahead of the wave because of a very strong driven government, you could say, incentivized greenification and electrification of heavy industry. So our steel factories, our, you could say, pulp and paper factories and all heavy cement industries, etc., is supposed to go electrical. And that really pushes the grid to its, I mean, utmost capacity. And Sweden has had a stable usage of electricity for quite a while, but recently, then a couple of years back, dramatically used the spending on electricity. Also, I mean, a lot of data centers, US ones, establishing in Sweden, in the north, also consuming a lot of electricity. At the same time as many others, but also quite, I mean, a high pace, we have introduced renewables and closed down a couple of nuclear power plants at the same time. And that has, in a combined manner, created enormous frequency problems, the ones I spoke about before. So when transmission grids doesn't get what they want, I mean, the 50 hertz frequency, that then a lot of problems come. And even the grid can easily collapse with quite small deviations from the optimum. So that's a totally new situation in the Swedish context. So that the response to that, since our TSO, the national grid owner, or the national grid organizer, as a Swedish government entity, they've got a serious assignment to fix the problem. And the way they did was to create a... for Sweden, a new marketplace where you could trade, you could say, solutions to the frequency problems. So that in the beginning, it was traditional actors like hydropower plants. They could go in and provide stability to the grid. And you could also have heavy industries to close down their operations at certain moment of time to help and offload the grid when needed for short responses. However, those things are not very fast. Those things were not sufficient. So it started to be obvious that the only way to really help the grid to keep its frequency and hence its performance was very fast response batteries, large scale. So lithium batteries started to become, the technical primary solution to be discussed, let's say early 2022. But new types of batteries that had more power and less capacity, faster response time, and very strong algorithms, helping them to allocate their capacity at the right moment of time. So at Swedish GreenTech, we identified that this is the beginning of something important. And we engaged in 2022 to try to develop a product optimal for the challenges faced by the Swedish TSO and the Swedish grid, and also with, let's call it, capacity to do other things as well. Because solving this problem, actually, it was obvious to us quite early, only takes a limited part of the battery capacity into use. So it means you do need a massive capacity to fix the problem, but you only need to spend seconds, sometimes up to a minute or so, of all this capacity to fix the problem, meaning you have all this other overcapacity. So I think what Swedish GreenTech is all about is to have an optimal battery solution, energy storage solution, for the specific Swedish problem, number one. And secondly, utilizing and leveraging the overcapacity not being used when solving that problem. So that's what we have been doing, and we have developed two products for that called Power One and Power Two. That is now, Power One is on the grid doing its job, very positive experiences. And our Power Two unit we will have the factory acceptance test on Monday next week.
Fantastic. And you have got two, as I understand, this sort of two affiliations that Swedish GreenTech have with the government agency and I think it's RGA Technologies. Tell me a little bit more about those, why they're obviously so important to what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, firstly and foremost, of course, we are working very closely with the leading aggregators as well as the TSO technology solution providers in Sweden to make sure that our product is actually exactly what is needed for the present and the future problems we try to address. So there we have a close collaboration and with several actually of the key players now being part of finding those algorithms and finding those energy management systems. I mean, which is a governance system of the battery resource. So that's one side of where we put a lot of effort. And the other one is to get the best battery cells. I mean, to get battery cells of high quality, meaning a lot of cycle capacity, fast response times, safe when it comes to from an environmental viewpoint, as well as so a fire risk management viewpoint. And then we have found, we were very lucky to find RGA Technologies that was just founded early this year, actually. It was founded earlier, but it was founded as a commercially capable production facility in early 2024. So Dr. KK, who is the founder of the company, was the CTO and the first employee in the biggest battery factory on the planet, and CATL that I think stands for 30% of all batteries being produced on the planet at the moment. So he was the intellectual architect behind CATL as it was developing to this global leader, and then he saw even further improvements to be done on the battery technology, and rather than making that happen within CATL, he got the chance of getting good capitalization and building the most modern and the most powerful, I would say, battery factory in the world today. So that is the factory that opened up this year and that is producing our battery cells for Power 2.
And Daniel, flipping to you now, you know, Swedish green tech, you know, naturally you're going to say, great, it's a fantastic business. But actually, well, we hope you would. But, you know, why is it going to be so interesting and appealing to investors? You know, is there something in Nicholas as an individual, you know, as going back to his title, we jest, but, you know, being both that scientist and entrepreneur, is there something in that? And then, you know, looking at what he's tapping into here, tell me, what's going to appeal to investors, do you think?
Well, I think for this situation, Daniel, you have more than a couple of things going at once, right? You both have its own product, its own unique technology, very powerful cost-effective battery as well. You know, it's difficult getting batteries delivered. It's difficult getting your own unique product delivered. With an EU CE permit, et cetera. So having your own actually IP rights is one thing. The second thing is having a unique market approach. So you're not just setting up batteries in any random places, and, you know, to a windmill somewhere as a project. That's for, you know, a standard pension fund kind of, you know, invest in a solar park, add on some batteries and, you know, have 15 years of cash flow and that's all great. So having an arbitrage where the payback period of those batteries is as short as possible makes your life a lot more safe, and you know you can take a lot more approach to the investment because you're not at risk for that long as you would be in any other market. And then thirdly, you need someone at the helm of this that both understand market incentives, technology, you know, this arbitrage that you have. You know, being in the right place at the right time and being able to both communicate with, unfortunately, politicians, the market, investors, battery factories on the other side of the planet, and make that come together in one arbitrage opportunity, I would say. So that would stand out so that in the market, you would say, okay, great, here you get a more, you know, lesser risk, higher return, with lesser, you know, risk on execution than you would in many other projects in this area. And that is extremely interesting for us because it's been quite difficult finding people in this industry that are not either in each box. You know, it's very rare that we have someone that fits within all three and can actually pull it off. And then, you know, I only need to wait a week, pick up the phone, and then there's another development and another step forward. So the proactivity is definitely in our favor in this project. And, you know, and plus the market right now really loves predictable cash flows, good growth, but predictable, stable, and with an aura of something that is will create an actual difference. So less fluff in the market, but, you know, predictable, great cash flows with a decent amount of growth for something that makes an actual difference is a really good story in the market right now.
And Daniel, we've spoken at length. You know, we're talking now, and it all sounds amazing. And obviously, being the British cynic I am, always like to bring that slightly, well, it can't all be great. We've spoken at length about how, you know, governments are sort of taking this evangelical, let's just make everything green now, tomorrow. And, you know, and without sort of sounding, again, evangelical myself, it is a journey. You know, as you say, things aren't green right now, you know, and people think, oh, right, it's just this switch overnight. You know, what's your view? And I'd like to get both of your views, actually, on this sort of, you know, total green application, you know, which governments are trying to do in each country. Although, you know, in America, you see people revolting against that sort of just, you know, washing of let's just make everything green. Do you think actually it would be more sensible to go, let's just deploy to solutions where they're much needed and much wanted on a country level? Daniel, starting with you, which I know your views, but remind me of them again.
Well, you know, if you give entrepreneurs money and leave them in peace, they will solve all the problems you have. you know, it will go slower if the government and the politicians trying to butt in and decide which route we should be inventing or, you know, how we should solve it.
Yeah.
So pumping out $750 billion for two charging stations in the U.S., you know, it's you know, not going to change a thing. You know, if they pump $750 billion in thorium plants development and figure that out finally, we wouldn't have a problem, you know, just, you know, so it's just innovation and research is going to solve all the problems. Taking a chill pill on the world's not going to end in 20 years because, you know, some temperature goes up 0.1 degrees. So the whole try to fix it overnight with billions of euros and dollars and just panicking, it's never going to work. That's why we are in this situation today, right?
Agreed.
So I think if what we can do individually, entrepreneurial-wise, obviously we can obviously, you know, try to fix the problems at hand and then try to create a calm enough environment so that the ones who are actually going to solve the problem can have a little bit of peace and quiet to just sit down and figure out the new big energy source. And then maybe, you know, while we're doing that, we could just, you know, acknowledge that we do have nuclear and it's, you know, fine.
Yeah,
it does exist. So
it does.
And now there, you know, Nicholas can speak a lot more on that, on these micro, you know, the smaller modular reactors that will, you know, can in a minute. Hopefully, those new technologies are here and present and can be used. So there is you know, a bigger picture here that obviously we would love to explore. Just, you know, on top of just stabilizing the Swedish grid, there is a very big picture here on energy, and it will be one of the biggest, most important elements to address, you know, now with this extremely heightened energy demand that needs to be green, but you cannot use only current technology.
No.
And especially not wind and solar, you know, you cannot both have trees and then gazillion square meters of solar panels that, last 15 years, and then it costed God knows how much pollution to get rid of it afterwards.
Yeah, so absolutely.
All the fake solutions, if we can ignore that for a minute and then focus on the actual ones, that would be brilliant.
And Nicholas, your thoughts? I mean, maybe slightly different, maybe the same as Daniel around this sort of.
No, I think it's very much shared perspectives.
Interesting.
I think it's very dangerous when politicians and governments are trying to govern, I mean, technological innovations and investments and using then greenification as one title on it. And then it ends up in very dangerous, complicated and expensive corners. Like nuclear, I think is a good example. So finally, I think that the small modular reactor concept, which is not a technological innovation, is more like, I would say it's an entrepreneurial innovation. It makes nuclear privately fundable, because as nuclear has been treated in the past, I mean, it had to be a government entity, I mean, or a full state saying that we want the nuclear power plant, and it's a big, massive 10-year project that becomes a 20-year project, and it costs four times as much as it was supposed to, and it just becomes a messy entity. And by the end of the day, you create the nuclear power plant that produces, let's say, 1.5 gigawatt of electricity and wastes 3.5 gigawatt of thermal energy in the water, because nobody really takes an economic responsibility around the entity, because there's no professional capital behind it or professional entrepreneurship driving the project. So what happens with a small modular reactor, just as an example of this, is that since it's produced in a factory, the producer can take a position where they guarantee the delivery time and the cost in a very different way than before. It's a little bit smaller in size, so it's actually in that sense more investable, and it's also, being smaller in size, it doesn't necessitate a massive rebuild of the transmission grid, which is also a national issue. So you can build it actually where you had something else, like a smaller coal power plant or something else, or hopefully taking down some of the less functioning, renewable energy production sites and replacing it with a a really good, I would say, energy infrastructure supporting type of a vehicle, which I think the small modular reactors are. So they are also cool contributions. We will always need, I mean, the big lithium-like batteries that are fast response and can help to work on the flexibility side for the grid as well as the synergies in the grid. But it should be added, these type of SMRs, in the whole infrastructure as well. And that's, of course, something that is finally, I mean, coming live now, and we see the first projects popping up, both in US, Europe, and Asia. And maybe in 2030, we would have a couple of hundreds of those SMRs that will be nicely helping out to also build smooth and resilient transmission grids and energy systems.
Nicholas, to finish us off, because it's been a fantastic conversation, I'm going to act as a sort of a fairy godmother type figure now. And I'm going to give you this sort of magical opportunity and say, right, if I was, what would you do, I guess, on a green energy scale, over and above what you're doing now, where in the world, if you had all the political backing and lots of financial backing, what's the thing that you go, this is just a no-brainer, and it may be what you're doing right now, but over and above that, if you can, and you had no limitations, I guess, and all the opportunity.
Sounds nice. Is that a guarantee?
So. I'm not really a fairy godmother, I'm sorry. I might look like one, or maybe not, I don't know. But no.
So what I would definitely, I mean, really run with instantly is to replace all the fossil fuel plants with SMRs. So I would bring SMRs into the exact locations of the fossil power plants, which is a, I mean, exact match, more or less. So you can reuse all the infrastructure. And around those, I would build energy clusters that would leverage the thermal energy that is normally thrown out in any power production, as we spoke about before. And by doing so, we could use many fascinating technologies for producing green hydrogen, green, I mean, ammonia. We could produce biochar. We could produce sustainable aviation fuel at a fraction of the cost that we see today. Because I think one of the real challenges for greenification and going green is that it's so much more expensive to produce something in a green way, as we consider it, compared to extracting something from the ground. I think it's a factor 4 or so at the moment. So you need to re-innovate the way you power the production of something compared to extracting it from the ground. So with SMRs all over the planet and energy clusters around them that leverage the thermal energy, which would then be, I mean, like a former waste that are now used, then we could definitely bring that let's call it relative cost down to less than 2. So we could go green for something which is privately, I mean, investable and could be funded by natural, I mean, business logics rather than trying to throw government monies that rarely lead to any sustainable effect.
And on that, you know, it's if you take the Chinese coal-powered plants today, their net CO2 pollution is the same as the combined Western world full, right? So if you did put up SMRs in those locations, I don't think the rest of the world would have to do much to be, achieve this green ambition, right? So then we can all fly private and have, you know, in good fun and eat steaks and just live our lives. and it would be quite a good investment project as well, because you would have, you know, 80 years of cash flow from one plant, right? So it's besides being a really great investment, you there is a clear way of fixing this whole climate issue, but you would need to really focus on China to do so, and you can't put these up in each of those locations and kind of and it, once the China figures out there's money in it, yeah, they will deploy it faster than, you know, anyone. EU will even regulate it to death.
Yeah.
You know. So, just my 2 cents.
No, thank you. Well, look, guys, on that note, I think we're coming to a close. It has been fantastic. as always, talking to you, Nicholas. Thank you for your time, and you, Daniel, as well, of course.
Welcome. Thanks, Lauren. Thanks.
You're more than welcome. And listeners, we will catch you next time. Thank you for tuning in.